Good afternoon and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. We are taping this
second week in a row,
but on the day instead of a few days before. So this is going to be great. We're going to keep on keeping on. Our listener on Facebook said when we posted last week, he's like, "Oh, I thought you guys were packed it in for life. Well, for 2023, you'd call the lid or whatever."
Really, one of
our listener Ted.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
Who did the statistics on? Like, he ran the stats for the amount of times we posted versus other years and saw the downward trend.
Yeah. It's not for lack of desire. It's for lack of time and for lack of, we've been podcasting for how long?
I have no idea.
I think since like 2016. I think since the first year we've been here. I mean, maybe so almost.
We've been that long.
Many years, yeah. So one.
So we petered out.
We said everything about everything.
Well, yeah.
And
finding a way to say it again takes some energy.
Yeah. But I mean, there's things going on that we can talk about. Lots of things going on we can talk about.
Well, so the big thing today is that the Synod in England decided to formally apostatize
they formally apostatized several times. It's like this slow train wreck in which they apostatized last year,
and now they're apostatizing
again this year.
Yeah,
just in case.
Apostasy wasn't enough, let's have a second apostasy. Right.
Because last year I think it was the bishops apostatized, and now this whole synod.
The whole synod by very close margin.
Right, not everyone in the synod, because it was the close vote. But so if I'm reading the news correctly,
which could be, I don't know, I've been getting mine on Twitter.
It's wheels within wheels as far as synod politics goes, and I can't tell if you were at synod, you know more about what's going on, and you hear me say this and you think Matt Kennedy isn't what he's talking about,
you're probably right.
So let me know what the reality is. But it seems like what happened was the group of people who really, 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 really want same-sex blessings realized that trying to change the canonical law of England, Church of England, would be almost impossible because they needed 2/3 vote in all three houses. And that's the bishops, clergy, and laity. And judging from the vote we saw today, there's no way they could get that. So instead, they have a little workaround.
That's what they're going to just test.
A trial rights for same-sex, the church isn't actually approving in an official way same-sex blessings, if I'm understanding this correctly, in an official way. But it is approving same-sex blessings in a test way, which totally fools God. God's like up there saying, yeah, I don't know what to do.
Oh, well, if it's a test.
It's just
like we had to test different liturgies in seminary. Right. Like, we had to test emasculating our worship,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't the official one. So when you weren't allowed to refer to God as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you had to only do it as like
the triune God,
mother-in-law, and the other mother.
That would be horrible. That would be a horrible deity. Mother-in-law and wife. Oh my goodness, that'd be awful.
Mother.
There'd be no man who would ever go to church.
Well, that's what it felt like. I mean, I love my mother and my mother-in-law, and I know that you love your wife. So for you, it should be
problem. I just don't think that sounds like a dumpster fire.
It was it was a bad, bad liturgy. It was paced badly. It was badly written, just in terms of English language.
Most of these things are. Most of these revisionist liturgies are really bad.
Why can't they write in nice English? It's because good English is patriarchal.
They've got to avoid the patriarchy, and they can't.
Which means, good pacing comes with believing that God is your father. Otherwise, poetry goes sideways.
I mean, so it's interesting because you can have good writing from pagans, right?
Yeah.
But then people who are pretending to be Christian.
Christians who have recently apostatized.
Can't write well.
Can't write well. That's the first thing to go. Your theology goes.
You're trying to shove
but then
demonic ideas into Christian language, and it doesn't. The language doesn't want to bend for it.
Yeah.
So, so anyway, yeah, Church of England is again. I mean, there's every as time goes by.
Which incidentally was a really great British sitcom.
Oh.
As time goes by.
I just walked into
you
that.
Just like.
they're walking further and further away from any kind of semblance of being a church, and the GAFCON Global South primates are more and more vindicated in every action they've taken.
Okay, so, but what I'm hearing is that it doesn't matter. Conservatives are still not going to go with GAFCON.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that too.
There's now a division within the Church of England, but what does that mean on the ground?
I mean, I think it depends on what kind of provision the conservatives are given within the Church of England. And also,
I bet we can tell them what it's going to be. You don't have to bless same-sex couples. You don't have to, but you have to make a provision for if they do want to be blessed. Then you have to provide something. So you don't have to do it yourself. You can have your private convictions, but you should never bring your private convictions into the public sphere of the corporate church.
Right, because this issue is really not that big of a deal, and you're just a bunch of pedantic people who can't let go of an ancient idea that is now.
And after a while, once you can't, you don't have to do a same-sex blessing. After a while, though, in a year and a half, you're going to have to do it.
Right. I mean, it'll be different. What I mean, though, is like, okay, so Church of England does have, when we talked about this with Lee Gatiss, they do have some protections for conservatives that the Episcopal Church did not. So they have a patronage system, for example, where the church society has patronage for a number of parishes in England. What that means is the church society gets to basically place ministers there, and the bishop doesn't. So that effectively insulates and isolates a church from a hostile wolf bishop.
I mean, but to what degree though? Don't you still have to go to meetings?
I mean, yeah,
you
don't have to go. I mean, like, your succession. And one of the biggest reasons we left the Episcopal Church is because our succession couldn't be secured. Like if I died, then the bishop would have had authority to come in there, and he would have come in there and strong armed a guy who's a little more liberal than I am in there, and that would have been the end of Good Shepherd. So we had to leave. But there's more protection for some churches in the Church of England. Now I still think they should go because the thing is, at this point, I think you're in Second John territory where you are. You remain in the same organization with these people. You're telling a lie about what that organization is and who they are. Like you're telling a lie about, you have to still address them as if they're Christian ministers when they're not, right?
And so, and like you have to be collegial with them. Whereas really,
if they're colleagues.
You shouldn't, you can't eat dinner with them. Mm-hmm. You can't partake of the Eucharistic feast with them.
Right.
You can't go to evening prayer with them. Or morning prayer, or synod with them. Like you can't go to the next round of synod.
Yeah,
I don't like.
This is where the guy, who's a young 20-something-year-old guy,
Redeemed Zoomer.
Yeah, this is what he gets around. You can't. Some of these to be involved in the church itself. That's when it's gone apostate means. Necessarily violating,
legitimizing, like by your presence.
By your being collegial with heretics, you're violating Second John. You can't do that. You're presenting these other people as if they're legitimate ministers of the gospel and they're not. So, I don't see how you stay in the Church of England. I I don't see how you stay in the Episcopal Church anymore. I don't see how you, I'm not saying there aren't legitimate Christians who are there. I'm just saying I think they're living in a place of spiritual cognitive dissonance.
So. Well, that seems like a particularly Anglican place to me. So, yeah.
I don't think it's Anglican. I think it's 21st century Anglican.
It's not core. It's not one of our core values.
Well, no. See, yeah,
living into the tension.
Right. Living the question.
Living the
that's
question.
That's what was. What it's all about, the via media and the three legged stool. That's how.
Well, so have you followed anybody who's been there, like on Twitter or anything? Have you?
I mean, I've been trying to follow the. Lately, I know that the CEEC, the Church of England Evangelical something or other. I know that all the different evangelical organizations got together and formed one overarching organization, the CEEC. I can't remember what it stands for, but Lee Gatus is I think the president of that or the chairman of that. He's going to probably have to send us an email telling us we're all wrong about a whole bunch of things. But they issued a statement just saying how awful what happened. The fact that what happened was so awful was awful. But really, I guess it's going to have to wait to see what happens. You can't really tell with English people when they're upset about something as much as you can tell with Americans. I mean, this seemed like a pretty...
It seemed like the couple of people I saw on Twitter were really upset.
Yeah. This seems, from an English perspective, pretty strong statement. So
The Twitter handle, Where's Welby, is really, really great.
That's good.
I think it's like mimicking Where's Waldo?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Because he's absent on the question of life. It's,
yeah.
He's all and, for like mass immigration, but when it comes to life.
No.
Like that little baby who they wrenched out of its parents' arms to murder. The Church of England said nothing.
Yeah.
Or it was a little baby who.
Well, it needed more care.
And it could have gotten some because the Italy,
yeah,
received the baby as a citizen or as a,
yeah, and but they wouldn't let it out of the
so
hospital.
That they could send the child to Italy to receive medical care.
Yeah,
some English judge said no, and this baby's going to die because,
well, it did die.
Yeah. What he said was, this baby's going to die because the goods of life was. Remember that ethics class we took in seminary where they use that language? Like, well, if you can't enjoy community, then why should you live?
I can think of some reasons.
If you can't.
What kind of community? This community?
This nebula. So we took this ethics class in seminary and they had this, and we were talking about abortion and euthanasia and all that kind of stuff. And
it basically was like, if you're older and you're isolated and nobody loves you anymore and you're in a home,
you should just soften.
You should just die because you're not enjoying the goods of life.
But the goods of life is so nebulous. Like it's defined by progressives. So like, you can't have sex anymore or something. You can't read, John Spong or something.
Jezebel.
You can't read Jezebel anymore, right? There's no more life for you. So it's horrible. I mean, this is basically state murder. I mean, every abortion is a state murder.
Well, but America did this.
This wasn't an abortion.
10 years
ago.
Baby
was born, but
we had this already with Terry Schiavo, Florida. We did this.
That's right. I remember that.
It was an adult woman
whipped out of the arms of her parents to murder her by the state.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they just turned off the. I think, and she was only on she had like a feeding tube. She wasn't on oxygen or anything, and they were like, no. And she also was
She wasn't
responsive. Like, she knew the people around her, even though she couldn't speak, and I think she was blind and stuff like that. But they were like, not good enough. So
that's just so bad.
That was traumatic in the U.S. And I haven't actually heard of cases like that because I'm pretty sure that people were sued. That's what needs to happen now is that people in the NHS need to be sued. And I don't think England has a culture of suing people. Lawfare. We need to import our lawfare. Well, that's all we have, though, is lawfare. Like, we can only sue. So we, and I think that conservatives are waking up to that more and like
suing the state.
Yeah, you need to sue and sue and sue and because if you're going to be sued, do unto others before they do unto you. But really, the only way out is to make people live by the rules they create. So if you create a litigious society and you live fully into that, then you have to be willing to bear the weight of that yourself. And I'm sure that that's applicable to the Church of England in some way, but I can't think of it right now. Well, okay, so but I wanted to say, like, I understand the English situation isn't like that in other parts of the world. And it's probably easier for Australians to leave the church and form a new province, or Americans, or maybe other parts in the world. Like, this is deeply divisive and painful in the mother church. I think we in the U.S. we don't really get the
right
the nuances of that. But as somebody who did, you know, leave and who lived in a church, like, I mean, I love the Episcopal Church. I didn't want to leave the Episcopal Church, really. I didn't even want to be like, I didn't leave the Episcopal Church. The Episcopal Church left me. That's not actually true. Like, you end up having to leave the Episcopal Church. I don't think that people who are caught in an institutional system like that, where the lines have been muddy for so long, or drawn so haywire for so long, they don't know the degree to which their own spiritual lives are deeply compromised. And they don't know, because you can't know until you actually do it, the freedom of getting away from people who don't believe in God at all.
Yeah.
Like, there's such an immense, glorious joy with worshiping with people who actually believe in God in a synodal situation.
Yeah.
Or synodical, or I however said that wrong, it. However you say it. I, you know, even the king can't say all those words in his beautiful reading of John for his birthday. He couldn't say, he stumbled over. You should
read that. It was such a great reading.
It was a beautiful reading, but he had trouble with the one of those words that ends in, I'm just saying, he's just like me. He can't speak clearly.
I think he's a pretty crazy.
Yeah, I know. He can speak clearly. Until you get out, you know, it's like the person who really needs to get out away from the really abusive husband. You think, oh, well, it'll be fine. I'll be able to change this person. Or if I'm just a little more patient, or if I just meet these demands a little bit longer, it'll be fine. They'll change. Well, the guy will never change.
And all you're doing is helping him.
You're just helping him continue to be abusive. And it's when you actually get away and then you see what normal life, what normal Christian community and worship is like, that you're then, you know, it's kind of a revelation. It's amazing. You think, oh my word, this is so much better. And then you start to get your ground again.
Yeah, it's right. It's a little bit like, yeah, you're right. That's a good analogy. I mean, when a woman who's been like totally abused by her husband gets out, and then they marry someone who's a good husband, and she had no idea that could ever happen. Like,
yeah,
there are men who won't.
Yeah, there's like normal. There are normal Christians out there,
right.
Who aren't like
so
that.
So it's like this sudden. Why was I living like this for so long?
Why did I have to have the prayers for love and faith? Like,
right.
Why did I have to compromise with? I mean, this.
Why did I have to go through Indaba and
super manipulative and gaslighting situation where you say, okay, we're not going to bless, I don't know if this is what they're still saying, but in February it was, we're not going to bless the relationship. We're just going to bless the people inside the relationship.
Well, now we're, now, so yeah.
Again, because God is really confused about these kinds of things. I mean, this is pure gaslighting. Right. This is intended to make you feel crazy.
Right. Well, and so, well, now it's not just that we're going to bless the individuals in the relationship. We're going to bless the relationship, but only as a test.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. This is just a test.
This is just a test. It's a trial.
A test of who? Like, God? This is
see if God notices.
We're testing God.
Let's do this and see.
Don't test me, Satan.
Maybe he won't notice. It's just a trial.
It's a trial.
Right.
So, I mean, it is functional atheism.
Yeah.
What the Church of England just did is...
Yeah.
Atheistic.
As if God doesn't reside in heaven, and
yeah,
Jesus doesn't sit on his throne,
and there's no
judgment or justice. Yeah.
So
we should talk about our book.
Oh yeah. Which book? What book are we talking about?
We should tell our listener to save his or her money for a publishing date in next year when our super professional publisher will be publishing.
Are you talking about like we're publishing it ourselves?
Yeah, right.
We don't have a... Is that professional publisher called Amazon?
Yeah. We haven't actually looked for a publisher because we're not going to probably look for a publisher because we're writing a marriage book for
and
our
by
church.
We, what do you mean we?
Well, you're writing it right now, but I'm going to edit it. I'm going to add my own things, and so it's going to be a we thing.
It's going to be.
I'm going to add my headship to that book. See, I'm the federal head of our family, and so that anything you do is technically my responsibility.
So are you going to actually read it? Because I've asked you if you wanted to read
it. No, I'm reading
it. You've
it.
Been
I'm not only am I reading it, but my name's going to be in the book. I'm going to be on the front cover. Like,
so it doesn't matter.
Because I have to. I'm your. I can take credit for everything you do because I'm your...
Yeah. Is that what Jim means?
Yeah, and if I have to take responsibility,
then you also get to take credit.
Right. If I take responsibility for everything bad that happens under the household,
then you should definitely be
able to. Yeah. Good. So.
No, I mean, that sounds fair. No, I have been avoiding this project. Like, it's been sitting on my to-do list. I write it every week at the top of my list. Write the marriage book. And then I don't do it all week. But yesterday I finally cracked it open, and it's not as bad as I expected because I've written a lot here and there, but and I thought it was really, really bad. That's because last year, or the year before, I wrote a full draft of the Psalms. I've like nailed it to the Psalms, and it was really bad. Like, deeply and terribly bad.
I don't think it was as bad as you think it was.
No, I think it was bad, so I threw it away. So I'm starting that over again.
You don't even have a copy of it? Like, you see, like, you literally threw it away?
I think, yeah, I threw it away. It was really bad.
You deleted the file?
No, I mean, I probably have it somewhere, but I'm not going to look at it ever again. And if I die, you need to go in there and delete that first. Well, if I'm dying, I'm going to get on my computer and delete that file. So I'm doing that again. But I looked at this stuff that I'd written on our marriage book, and it wasn't bad.
Well, we've been talking about marriage for the time, all our entire ministry. So we do have some experience in this whole thing.
And I feel like there are a lot of marriage books out there. I don't know if you've noticed this. There are so many marriage books out there. So it seemed like a good time to add to the pile. Or pyre.
Well, are there a lot of marriage books out there? I mean, I thought, like, the last big one I thought was Tim Keller's, right?
Well, I Googled marriage on Amazon.
And there's a lot of them out there.
There were the mostly American, like, or I mean, Christian ones. If you just put marriage in, most of the results that come up are evangelical people writing about marriage, continuing to write about marriage.
Well, we haven't put our book out yet. So, I mean, when people think of marriage, they think of, I don't know, Tim Keller's book, and then they'll think of our book. Sure.
So are you saying that they will? When, no, when it comes out.
As soon as we publish it, I mean, we'll be rushing to
Amazon. They'll be like, there's Tim Keller.
And there's
And then there's the other one.
No, it's interesting. So I think maybe what broke your writing block was the fact that we were teaching on this in class.
Yeah.
So, and so far, it's been good, I think.
I think it's been all right.
This is our probably fourth or fifth round of teaching it.
I didn't remember that. I thought this was our second. Mm-mm. I thought we'd only done it.
No, we've done it like many times before.
I have no recollection of that at all. None.
Yeah.
So.
I can't wait to get to the children section. Should we talk about the...
I can.
Should we talk about...
I can wait.
There's been a big death step on...
Yeah, I mean...
On X, formerly known as Twitter.
Somebody said... like there's an old clip of somebody saying something about
Doug
their
Wilson.
Children.
So here, so I know everyone has a strong opinion about Doug Wilson, and I'm not going to wade into that one way or the other. I am going to say I really appreciated his marriage book, Standing on the Promises, which is really good. Maybe recommend that book.
His parenting.
Yeah, it's kind of a parenting book, right? Right.
Yeah.
So. One of the big, what's going on right now in X is like apparently.
I can't believe you're just blithely calling it X. Like, if you just give it in, that's just what you're calling it.
What am I supposed to call it?
Well, I don't know. People say like
the site
app.
Known as X.
Yeah. The app formerly known as X.
I mean, I don't know.
Or Twitter, or as it were, X. You're just calling it X now?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems like a circumlocution.
Well, I mean, you did just say X like in a blithe way, like that's what it is now. So that's the end of an era that you didn't qualify it.
I hated Twitter under the former management, so I'm happy to call it whatever Elon Musk wants to call his thing. I'm happy to call it that. Welcome
the new overlords.
Yeah, I do.
You shouldn't say that because Kathy Hochul is listening to our podcast.
Yeah, okay. Kathy Hochul is listening to everything. She's, yes. So the death step was over this small, short clip. You know, you can always tell there's something fishy going on when there's a short clip of something.
Of a longer interview.
Yeah. And so she was, Doug Wilson's wife was talking about how she picked her daughter up from a party and her daughter didn't want to go. Do I have to go now? Kind of like sad to see her mother. And I'm assuming this is when she was like 5 or 6 or something like that. So she said she disciplined her when she got home. And people were going, what? That's ridiculous. And I don't know the circumstances. And it may be I haven't listened to the larger clip, so I don't know where the context was. But I think one thing is really weird about the way the response anyway is that like somehow in the last 5 minutes, it has become the parent's responsibility to get out of the way of your child's big feelings, right? You can't, if you're not, like historically, classically, biblically, I mean, parents are in charge of helping their kids learn how to control their feelings and how to be careful not to always express everything they're feeling, right? So if a child has a temper tantrum, that's an act of defiance, and that it's an act of self-will. And a child is able to control that. He just doesn't want to, or she just doesn't want to. And so that's a reason to discipline a child, is to help that child see, oh, if I have this temper tantrum, I'm going to be in worse trouble than I am now. So I think I'll control myself. And we've seen that happens, right?
I mean... it's not just 5 minutes ago. Like I've been seeing this in different corners of the internet that the question of giving your child, I would say giving your child the gift of self-control.
Right.
Giving your child the gift of self-control, which is a positive way of saying when your child's emotion, big feelings are too big, you help your child to see that those feelings need to fit into a smaller box.
Right.
and that they actually have the power to stuff their feelings for a few minutes. Well, not that they never can have feelings and they can never have agency, but if you can't control yourself, your body, your emotions, your thoughts.
Sorry.
We have our dogs are barking. If you can't, if you don't have self-control, well, I mean, Proverbs says you're like a, or somewhere in the Bible it says you're like a city whose walls have been broken down. Like you're at the mercy of everything else and you're open to Satan, really. You have to have control over yourself. That's the basis of civilization.
Right.
Mastery over your emotions and your thought life.
Right.
So if you
parents have to help.
That's one thing that parents have to give their children that gift. And there are some pretty gentle ways to give children that gift. Like you don't have to be authoritarian. You don't have to be cruel, but you do have to your own feelings and act for the good of the child.
An actual tantrum is almost always an act of defiance.
So. It may not be the first time, but then once the child is gently taught, hey, that's not a behavior that
well, because it's always continue. I can't have my way, right? So you're not letting me have my way. So yeah. That's a defiant act, even the beginning. Yes, you can warn the kid for the first time, the second time.
Yeah, if you ever act like that again, it's going to be really
serious consequences for you.
Yeah, so then, don't ever do that again.
Right. And then,
but it had this so this whole like idea that it's mean to equip children to govern themselves through the use of judicious but not abusive pain.
Right.
That's been going on. That's been growing, and it's just finally come out on Twitter, like in the lurking in the dark corners of evangelicalism has been this. You can never curb if your you child for any reason.
Right, because the emotions are the true self, right? So if the true self can't be, it's very Dr. Spock, right, from the 60s.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't read that.
That's what Dr. Spock said. If you know crushes the child's spirit. We heard it in seminary, right? If you like any limitations in the child's self-expression.
Oh, yeah, no, they said no is the child's word to you, not your word to the child.
Right, because if you say no to your child, you're limiting his development of self. Or heard it
I mean, I grew up in Africa, so I was choking and spitting on that lesson. And I was like, I can't imagine anyone in the world through time and space ever hearing some person standing up in front of a room and saying, no is the child's word to you. Hey, I mean, that's not a thing. That's never been a thing. That should never be. That is the sign that we have come to the end times.
Right.
When somebody says, no is the child's word to you. Oh, honey, no. No is never the child's word to you. No is your word to the child, and the child doesn't ever, ever, ever say no.
Right.
Or
defy you. In
or
any way.
Disrespect
right.
you.
Right.
Unless the child wants his little blonde head and sorrow to go down to Sheol.
Right.
No.
Well, see. With...
No is my word. No is my word to all the people saying that and saying no.
Right. So it's not. And again, like you said, It's not that you don't want the child to have emotions. It's that the child has to learn how to channel those things, right? So you. I would say, John the Baptist was a person of strong emotion, right?
But he had big feelings.
He had big feelings. But John the Baptist had been taught by Zechariah and Elizabeth to channel those big feelings, and by the Holy Spirit to channel those feelings in the right way. So he was able to say to the Pharisees.
You brood of vipers
who warned you to flee from the coming wrath. And that was an appropriate
use
outlet
of his big feelings. Yeah, what were Jesus's big feelings when he was like dealing with like walking into the temple,
right,
finding the all the many there?
Right, he had big feelings. He channeled it.
He channeled it.
Well, he's Jesus, so he doesn't have any sin nature, but. But if he were not Jesus, he'd be channeling that in the right.
It's just that, so it's not, first of all, when you give children the gift of self-control, you give them the gift of self-expression as well. Like you actually enable them to more fully become who they are.
It's like, I mean, it really is like clipping a rose bush, right? You cut it back. So that it can grow in the right way.
And it grows beautifully. Right. And it's a pleasure and a joy. And And this has literally been known by all the world. That's what's so horrible, is that some people online don't know that this is true. Incidentally, we are going to be able to fisk the video of the guy taking down our parenting advice, because I've spoken to all our children and they're all free over the Thanksgiving break. So we're going to have a family podcast next week. I'm not sure. It probably won't come out on Wednesday because I don't know what people's work schedules, but we're going to have a special, like uber special.
Where we go through. That guy was really mad.
He was really angry. He had big feelings. He had so many big feelings.
Was he a homosexual person?
No, he said he had kids.
Okay. Okay.
He had a, okay. You sound like a boomer there. Yeah. No, he has children, and that's why he felt so strongly about our wretched parenting advice.
One more thing we should say before we close here. Since we're talking about marriage and family and all that kind of stuff, is that if you haven't listened to any of our marriage class online, you should recommend listening. I think it was the last class, actually. We were talking about headship. And you said something that was really, I thought, important, because I think in a lot of the books about traditional roles, it's treated as something you have to act up to. Like there's this kind of objective external role out there, and you as a man have to figure out, as a husband, have to figure out how to act in accordance with that role.
Well, and that's because people online say things like, well, St. Paul said, act like a man. And right. By that, they mean that you need to
swagger.
Yeah, become some sort of culturally enacted he-man.
Oh, and the woman, the same thing. Like, women, here's a woman's role. Now you have to learn how to play into that. Whereas what you said is right, is that, you know, when God created a one flesh union in marriage between a man and a woman, those rules are inherent in it, right? So
roles or rules.
Those roles are inherent. So there is, it's not, you have to act like, it's not that you have to try and become the head of your household. You are.
Right. So you can play that out badly or well.
Right.
But one way to play it badly is to try to become a different person. So it's really about, you know, engagement or disengagement. If whatever kind of person you are, if you disengage and abdicate your participation in the family system, then you're doing it wrong. Whereas if you do participate in the family system, you're doing it right, whatever kind of person you are. But you can't say to somebody like, well, I was complaining about Jory Micah. She said to her husband, I'm going to be the head of the house now.
Right.
Well,
you can't be the head of the
house. I mean, you can be pushy.
Bossy.
You can be a woman with big feelings in your marriage. You don't have to take up, you know, very little amount of space. If that's how your marriage has arranged itself, like the man can be a very quiet person in the background. That's not wicked. But he doesn't have to come out and domineer. But what you're saying, the way he becomes a bad head is if he undermines that by all of his behavior and his unwillingness to engage and be related to his family.
Well, because the reality is he is the head.
Right.
The wife can't be the head. She can try to play the role.
She can try to play the role, but she can't do it. So then everybody's going to be angry and sad all the time. Yeah. I mean, he can be a bad head or he can be a good head.
Right.
But he can't not be the head.
Right. Which is very sad.
It's so sad.
For our egalitarian friends.
Yeah. Have to take his big feelings. And
well, she was like, we can probably not have time to talk about this podcast, but the argument against complementarianism is if a couple is well adjusted and enjoying themselves, that's because they're functionally egalitarian. They might believe complementarianism, but they're not acting it out, because when they act it out, it's necessarily abusive, which again denies the whole essence of what marriage is. I mean, when Paul says to wives, you know, submit your husbands as to the Lord, because the husband is the head of the wife, not should be, might become if he tries really hard, not, it just is. And then the wife is the husband needs to treat the wife like the church,
Jesus, because
she is, yeah, right? Right. So there's not a becoming or a, gee, I don't want it to be this way. So complementarianism is only just trying to conform itself to what, even though I know you don't like that word, but conform itself to the reality is right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do think, I don't know about the effectiveness of the word at this point, because it has been
caricatured and
made. Yeah, it's been like trampled in the dust.
Yo, some guy. I mean, yeah, like, there was Tony today at lunch. There was that guy who said, "Don't ask your wife to do something as if you're leaving it open for her to say no." Yes. Yeah, so when you ask your wife to do something, can ask a question to make sure the question is in the
make
tone
sure
of
she
command,
knows. Yeah.
Honey, would you get me a sandwich?
Yeah. I mean, we tried that in the.
It doesn't work.
I mean,
we didn't try that. I never tried.
Well,
we didn't.
I mean, yeah. Like, well, that is how many cultures have existed. Mm. In our culture, it doesn't work anymore. I mean, it might have worked in the 1400s, but it doesn't work anymore. And so you shouldn't keep trying to make it work. But that doesn't mean that you can't be the head of your household if you don't talk to your wife like that.
Yeah.
Like, there are other ways to talk to your wife.
I would say just not talking to her like that, because you love her. And she's she's your one flesh
person. The same way that you don't, when you're, you know, a parent, you don't have to be authoritarian to be a good parent. Like, they're not, it's not just, it's a false dichotomy to say either you're authoritarian or you don't teach your children self-control. That's, you know, there's another option in the middle. Anyway, we are going to head over to demotivations. So I don't know what we're going to talk about over there, but it'll be a special surprise. And so thank you so much for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.